Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. Today I'm going to talk about Matsu. He was born in 708 and lived in what was considered the golden age of Chinese civilization. He's the next patriarch in line after Nanyue, an heir of Wei Nong's, who Paul Pope's name talked about last time. And forgive me if I say the names wrong or funny, but they catch me up sometimes. Wei Nong taught his students to use their non-conceptual mind so they could experience reality directly without relying on preconceived opinions, biases, or beliefs. We sometimes call this don't know or before thinking mind. Matsu traveled around and worked with several teachers, including a Korean monk, before he met Nanyue. Matsu is described like this. His appearance was remarkable. He strode along like a bull and glared about him like a tiger. When he stuck out his tongue, it reached up over his nose. When he began studying with Nanyue, Matsu was very attached to sitting. Nanyue asked him, "Why are you sitting in meditation?" Matsu replied, "Because I want to become a Buddha." Nanyue picked up a roof tile and began polishing it. Confused, Matsu asked him, "Why are you polishing a roof tile?" Nanyue said, "If I can make a mirror by polishing a roof tile, how can you become a monk by sitting in meditation?" Matsu asked, "Then what shall I do?" Nanyue said, "If a carriage stops moving, do you hit the carriage or the ox?" In China, the ox is a metaphor for mind, and there's a teaching about the 10 ox herding pictures that we have gone before, and it kind of goes around using that example of an ox for each kind of step of awakening, I guess. So Nanyue was telling Matsu to look deeply into his own mind rather than just sitting in the posture of a Buddha. Buddha has no fixed form. He said if you try to sit like a Buddha, you will kill the Buddha. If you're attached to sitting, you will never realize the absolute or emptiness. Then how should I keep my mind? Nanyue said, "Your study of the teaching is like planting a seed. My teaching of the Dharma is like rain from the clouds." This teaching had a profound effect on Matsu and became the cornerstone of his teaching. Buddha is mind. The essence of Matsu's teaching was that mind is Buddha. Matsu meant that literally. In one of his talks, he told the monks, "Your very mind is Buddha." When Bodhidharma came from China, this was his teaching. There is no Buddha apart from mind. There is no mind apart from Buddha. Unlike earlier Buddhist teachers, Matsu didn't lecture on the sutras or engage in ceremonies. Instead, he took advantage of the situations that arose during daily activities to open his students' mind. He was the first Zen master to use radical teaching style. Sudden shouts, kicking, striking, and unexpectedly calling to his students as they were walking away from him. He would also just stay silent or twist the nose of a student. By using these sudden surprises, he brought students to experience enlightenment by letting go of their habit mind. Ordinary mind is the way. What is meant by that? No activity, no right, no wrong, no grasping or rejecting without holy or worldly. Whether walking, sitting, or standing, responding to situations, dealing with people, everything is the way. So here are some spontaneous dialogues between Matsu and his students. These types of encounters later evolved into what we know now as the Zen Kung-on tradition that we use here also. So one day, Chan Master Peo Chei was accompanying Matsu for a walk. He asked, "What is the great nirvana?" "Quickly," exclaimed Matsu. "What quickly?" "Look at the water," replied Matsu. Pai Cheng asked, "What is the direction of the Buddhas?" "It's the very place where you let go of your body and mind," replied Matsu. Layman Peng asked, "Water has no bones or sinews, and yet it can support a boat of 1,000 pounds. What is the meaning of this?" Matsu said, "There's neither boat nor water here. And what bones and sinew are you talking about?" A monk asked, what's the fundamental meaning of Buddhism? Matsu said, what is the fundamental meaning of this moment? And lastly, when another monk came to Matsu saying that he sought awakening, Matsu asked, why have you come to me? You have your own treasure house. Look there for what you seek. What is the treasure house? The monk asked. What you are asking is your treasure house. So by the end of the 8th century, Matsu, along with Shitao, was one of two peerless masters in China. It is said you weren't a serious student of Chan, unless you had visited both of them. Matsu gave transmission to 139 students who spread the Dharma and his method throughout China. During the fourth month of the Chen Yuan period, 788, Matsu climbed Shi Men Mountain in Chengcheng. As he was walking through the forest, he saw a cave which was very flat. He told his attendant, next month my old and useless body should return to this place. Having said that, they returned to the monastery. Not long after, Matsu became ill. The monk asked him, how are you feeling? Matsu replied, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Which might sound familiar to some of you. On the first day of the second month, after having taken a bath, he sat cross-legged and passed away. During the Yuan Ho period, 806 to 820, he received posthumous title Chan Master Ta Chi, or the Great Quiescence. The stupa built in his memory was called Great Adornment. So something that I was thinking about, Zen Master Jibong had a phrase that really meant something to me. It clearly has stayed with me for years, and I think about it a lot of times when I need to slow down. Rest in the totality of present moment awareness. And I like that word rest because it kind of means just rest. And it is what it is. This is the moment. This is now. This is what we see, what we hear, what we're doing right this minute. And believe in that. Sometimes I think trust in the moment, or the totality of that moment. But anyway, so that has always stuck with me. And another thing that he talked to me about one time was sudden enlightenment, which Matsu sort of did through his wild kicks and shouts and stuff like that. But also gradual awakening. And Zen Master Jibong said, you know, that there's both. There's this sudden enlightenment that happens to people, and also like a long, slow, burning fuse that is very long and slow, but it keeps burning. And I think he was talking about me. I'm the slow burner. So indeed, I have kept with it and continue to burn slowly but surely. So anyways, thank you.
Not only you.
One Zen master talked about it as if you were out walking in a very fine mist out in the fields and maybe didn't even notice that it was almost rain. But after a while, you're thoroughly soaked. Other people get a full downpour. Thank you for that. Matsu was such a pivotal figure in the history of Zen. As Debbie talked about, he really pioneered a lot of these methods that just did not exist beforehand. A lot of early teachers really were much more academic. They would lecture at length on the sutras, which is a wonderful, it's a wonderful thing to read the sutras. There were a lot of very devout Buddhists who would either chant the name of the Buddha or different bodhisattvas in the hopes that that will provide some kind of salvation, or they would walk around these stupas that were put up throughout China that were said to hold the bones of the Buddha or other patriarchs. And Matsu really didn't give credence to those kinds of things. That teaching he got from Nanyue, that mind is Buddha, not that sitting meditation, make no mistake, sitting meditation is really helpful because it allows you to look into your mind and see the kind of barriers that exist there because of the way we're conditioned or beliefs that we hold on and mistake for the truth. But residing in the present moment and responding to the ever-changing present moment allows us to be available to actually see how we can help ourselves and help this world. So a lot of these really quick answers he gave to questions that Debbie read about, really, I mean, one of my favorite ones, which is really simple and you may have heard it, but what is the meaning of Buddhism? A lot of these monastics would come to him and other teachers asking, tell me about it, hoping for some kind of explanation, some kind of idea about what it all means. And his answer was, what's the meaning of this moment? In other words, can you directly be present with what is, rather than be caught up in more of your thinking?